This is Health First with Dave Fuller, available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
Well, we're back. We're talking with Kristen Mancinelli about her book, The Ketogenic Diet. It's a new book that was just released. Kristen, tell us a little bit about what happens to people's metabolism when they're on this diet.
It's really pretty fascinating. Ketosis is really the body's way of dealing with starvation. Normally, your brain in particular will use glucose for all of its energy needs. So 100% of the brain's needs get met by glucose. Other cells in your body, heart cells, muscle cells, kidney, liver, et cetera, can use a variety of fuels. So amino acids from protein or fatty acids from fats or glucose. What happens is when you either starve, don't eat anything, or completely eliminate carbs and continue to eat protein and fat, your body will go into a state of ketosis. What happens is that your liver upregulates production of ketones. Ketones are made from fat, and it sends those ketones out into the bloodstream to be used for energy. There's really a negligible amount of ketones used for energy when you're eating a carb-rich diet, but when you're eating a very, very low-carb ketogenic diet or not eating at all, your body will make ketones, and your brain will start to use those for energy. About two-thirds of the brain's energy needs can be met by ketones at the peak of ketosis. So essentially, you're using more fat for energy than you normally would. The way I like to describe it is, you know, you're using your fat cells rather than the muffin you would eat for lunch. And that's the major shift that happens.
Now, what happens, you know, I guess a lot of people probably, you know, if they're overweight, they're worried about eating fat because, you know, just, we've been told for 50 years, fats are bad for you. And what we see in this diet and similar diets, but especially this one, is that we need to fuel our body with fats and not carbohydrates. Does a substitution of fatty food for sugar foods really make that much of a difference?
Well, it does. You know, first I should say that a very high-fat diet in the context of a very high-carbohydrate, especially poor-carbohydrate diet, is not healthy. You know, so if you're eating a lot of fat along with your muffins and your cakes and your cookies and your sugar, that's a recipe for metabolic syndrome and heart disease, and you shouldn't do that.
So high-fats and high-sugars doesn't work, but high-fats and high-protein does.
Yeah, you know, also it's important to note that the ketogenic diet is not a high-protein diet. It's really moderate protein. So that's a little bit of a misconception. People think it's very heavy in meat. It's really not. It's mostly fat. So about 75% of your calories come from fat, about 15 from protein, and, you know, very little from carb. What we see is that really eating a mix of fats is not detrimental to health in the way that eating high carbs is, frankly, you know, and again, high carbs from, if all you're eating all day is broccoli and salad greens and you're eating 300 grams of carbs from that, well, I don't know anyone who does that. That would probably wreak havoc on your GI tract, but, yeah. I doubt that would be damaging, but that's not what we see in modern society, right? There's just not a lot of evidence that says that high-fat, low-carb diets are dangerous. There is a lot of evidence that says that high-carb diets, especially the type that we eat today, are damaging, you know, mainly through insulin resistance and metabolic syndrome.
Now, Kristen, how many people have tried this diet and what's happened to people that you've seen use it?
You know, I mean, it's becoming so much more popular. Interestingly, the Atkins diet was, I think he sold 90 million copies of his first book, you know, and that was, that was sort of a revolution. But I think one of the challenges with the Atkins diet, unfortunately, was that it was promoted as really a high saturated fat diet. So it was a lot of talk about lobster and butter sauce and, you know, hamburgers without the bun. That's really not a balanced ketogenic diet. I mean, a ketogenic diet should include all types of fat, including, you know, unsaturated fats from salmon, avocado, olive oil, things like that. So I think people got a misconception about what the diet was. during the Atkins era. But during that time, you know, millions of people lost weight and it, you know, had tremendously improved health. I mean, I know that Atkins ran a clinic in New York where he treated people for all sorts of things. And he talked at that time, he talked in his book about shopping in the grocery store around the perimeter of the grocery store, you know, which is something we hear a lot today from people who talk about improving the food environment. They say, you know, when you go in the grocery store, go around the perimeter. So that's where the produce is, fruits and vegetables, meat, dairy, right? And skip all the stuff in the middle. So, you know, I mean, that was sort of, you know, revolutionary, and it was a good idea. It just didn't take hold because of the way that it was marketed. I think today the ketogenic diet is coming back around because we are seeing in the scientific community, you know, that try as we might, we can't really link saturated fat to heart disease risk. And in fact, what we see is that excess carbohydrate tends to have more of an impact on heart disease. So we're now becoming more open to the notion of using these high-fat, low-carb diets. And, you know, I think in the last 10 years, we've seen a lot more in the literature of these types of diets and people really achieving weight loss and also really preventing you know, preventing disorders related to excess glucose and insulin, so preventing diabetes and metabolic disorder.
So have you noticed, you tried it yourself. Did you notice a difference? What did you notice when you were doing it?
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of fun with it. You know, it was different than I would normally eat. You know, I typically don't really eat meat, so that was an interesting change. I did have meat probably every day, not a ton of it, but, you know, 4 ounces of something for dinner. My first week, I was very, very tired. You know, I definitely had the symptoms that we hear about, you know, just fatigued muscles, really just I slept quite a bit. And after that, it was like a sea change. I mean, it was really funny. My friends noticed, you know, I just had a ton of energy. My mood was very stable. I was never hungry, but I really ate a lot when I wasn't hungry because I was developing recipes for the book, and I was really going to different places and seeing what I could order and how feasible it would be for a reader to actually carry out the diet in day-to-day life. And so, you know, I would say I ate more than I wanted to, but I joked that I was going to do a publicity stunt where I went on a camping trip for 3 days and only brought a bag of walnuts because I would have been totally fine. I mean, I never was hungry. I lost about 9 pounds. It was about 3.5 months, I think, I did it. And I think if I had eaten, I'd eaten to my, you know, satisfaction and not been trying foods here and there, I probably would have lost a lot more. But I'm normal weight to begin with, so, you know, I wasn't trying to lose weight.
Right. Did any of your friends try it, and what did they say?
No, but I did have a couple of clients who did it, and they, you know, initially would complain about the diet really not being as, you sort of like boredom, right? Because, yeah, you know, you're just only eating from a handful of foods. But then after a while, when you get over that, they started to be much more creative, and people were cooking more, you know? So the couple of people who tried it, they were coming up with these sauces to put on their chicken or their fish, you know, when normally they would just sort of make it in a plain way. And I think that really speaks a lot to what a healthful diet is. You know, we talk a lot about the French and how they eat such high amounts of saturated fat and they eat these rich foods, but, you know, they don't have the heart disease that we do. You know, I think they enjoy their food more because they eat smaller portions, but they make it tasty. I mean, they make a sauce for their steak. They don't just eat the steak. You know, the chicken has a sauce. Everything has a sauce, you know. Those things are pleasurable, and they're enjoyable. And I don't think we take as much advantage of them in our modern world because, again, we're afraid of fat. Sauces are fat rich, you know. So that was definitely a change. And it was a lot of fun. I pulled out recipes from old books, and I started making, you know, things I would never make, like lemon cream sauce. It was fun.
What is the difference between this ketogenic diet and the Mediterranean diet? Because a lot of it seems similar in the sense that, you know, that some of the foods and the you know, the focus on healthy oils.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that you've picked up on that because I agree with you. I think that it mirrors in many ways the Mediterranean diet, and I think that's probably why the health effects are similar. You know, I think the Mediterranean diet is longer term, really where one could or should go after a ketogenic diet. You know, Mediterranean diet does include beans, legumes, and grains, you know, so that's something that obviously is not allowed on the ketogenic diet because those would just have too much carbs and they would put you over your ketogenic threshold. But you know, in the Mediterranean diet, they don't eat a ton of those foods. You know, they don't eat an entire plate of white rice with you know, one skewer of chicken the way that we have in at least in the U.S. So, you know, it is similar in a lot of ways. I think that someone who wants to lose weight, you know, and really shift up their eating habits if they have the typical diet where they're eating a lot of processed foods, ketogenic is very helpful in breaking people of those habits, in particular of the taste preference for sweets, and also in forcing them away from convenience foods, because there are not a lot of foods that are packaged, shelf-stable foods that are ketogenic. Most of those foods are very flour and sugar-rich. That's how they're able to last and not perish on the shelf. So, you know, people go on a ketogenic diet, they start cooking more, they start eating more fresh foods, they really get off of their what they call the sugar addiction. And I think longer term, you know, incorporating legumes, grains, beans, what have you, as part of an overall diet would make a lot of sense.
We only have a couple minutes left, but I just want to quickly ask you about, you talk about cancer, or you've done an interview with Dr. Seyfried.
Seyfried,
yeah. Tell me a little bit about that and why the ketogenic diet is good for cancer patients.
I find this to be a fascinating area of research, and I didn't stumble upon it until I started the research for this book. So I'm certainly not an expert, but Dr. Thomas Seyfried is at Boston College, and he wrote a book called Cancer as a Metabolic Disease. And from, you know, what little I know, I can share with you is that cancer cells are only able to use glucose. So the way that other cells in our body can use, like I mentioned earlier, amino acids, fatty acids, a variety of fuels, ketones, cancer cells can only use glucose. So one pathway for this as a treatment for cancer is that you're essentially starving the cancer cells while not starving the other cells. They also talk about how fasting, you know, complete abstinence from food can slow cancer growth, but that also weakens the rest of the body because fasting weakens your immune system. Not having enough nutrients for your other body functions weakens you overall, so that's not ideal. So this is sort of a way around that, feeding the body but not feeding the cancer. That's one pathway. Another area, which I might be less articulate on, but is the notion that, you know, the cells in our body age, essentially, by having to metabolize nutrients all the time. So the more you're eating, the more you're causing the cell stress in its effort to metabolize nutrients. And so it's, you know, cancer and the aging process of cells are sort of linked in that way. So this notion that when you slow down, you know, you don't feed the body as much fuel, you don't cause it so much stress in metabolism, that can prevent cancer as well.
Kristen, we're right out of time, and I'm just wondering if you can just give a website or tell people where they can get more information and give us the title of the book again so they can pick it up.
Sure. Well, the book is called The Ketogenic Diet, A Scientifically Proven Approach to Fast and Healthy Weight Loss. And you can link to it from my website, which is kristenmancinelli.com. And you can also find it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Kristen, thanks for coming on the show. It's been great having you.
Thanks so much, Dave.
That's it for this week's show. I want to thank Garrett Perry and producers across the country that are making the show available to you. Have a great, healthy week, and thanks for listening.